Memory Palace. Memory Palace.
Right now, your brain's already tweaking what I just said, and by the time we're done, you'll swear in details that never happened and drop ones you thought were solid. I'm Joe Hoster. You're listening to Memory Palace.
You know, my childhood bedroom keeps popping up. I can't map the furniture in my head, but I can still feel that pale, buttery yellow on the walls, like I can taste the safety of it.
That's so vivid. Mine flips the script. I remember a beach day in sharp detail, but in my head the sky is this flat, colorless gray, and I know it was sunny. It bugs me. Why won't my memory paint the blue that was there?
So are we recording events, or are we repainting them with feelings, experiences, and even culture? Why does a splash of red feel urgent, while a soft blue feels like calm you can breathe?
You're right. That intersection where the world's palette meets the scaffold of memory is where I want to go with you. The link between color and recall is vibrant, occasionally misleading, and deeply personal.
I want to know why a single hue can crack open a whole flood of emotion from one moment, and how those shades end up steering who we are now.
And here's the twist. That personal palette gets nudged, not just by life, but by language. Marketers figured out a while ago, it isn't only the pigment, it's the name attached to it.
Wait, the label alone? Calling a car midnight blue instead of plain dark blue actually changes how we feel about it?
A lot. Experiments show the exact same paint chip gets rated more likable when it's tagged with an evocative name. Call it mocha instead of brown, and people lean toward it.
No way. Even on a random color chip?
On chips, towels, jelly beans, the pattern holds. People reliably prefer unusual or fancier color names. And I should say, folks in consumer psych know this 10 times better than I do. If one of them corrects me, I'll take the note.
So, my buttery wall color, if my parents had called it Daffodil Dream or something, I might be even more attached to it.
Possibly. A label like Goldenrod for a yellow jelly bean, instead of just lemon yellow, does two things. It grabs attention, and it makes you wonder why that name fits.
You stop for a beat.
Exactly. A tiny puzzle your mind wants to solve.
So it stops being a mere hue and turns into a concept, almost a story with texture and place baked in, before you've even lived anything with it.
And the effect doesn't end at checkout. In one study, people imagining buying custom sweatshirts picked the odd-named colors more, and later felt better about those choices.
Let me guess. More satisfied afterward.
Noticeably more satisfied. The label seemed to lift the whole experience.
So the color's name gets woven into how we remember the object. Another coat we didn't realize was going on. Which means these associations aren't only homegrown. They're packaged for us, and they end up shaping future nostalgia. Clever and a bit eerie.
I get the uneasy part. It feels like soft influence, but it isn't sorcery. It rides on a basic brain process. We use words to sort sensations. A term like mocha isn't a sticker. It's a cognitive shortcut.
A shortcut in what sense?
It pre-activates a network before your visual system finishes parsing the shade. Hear a coffee chocolate name, and you're already primed with warmth, richness, coffee, chocolate.
Sorry, say that last bit again. I was stuck picturing jelly beans wearing sweaters.
Sure. The name fires up associations first. Then the color arrives to meet those expectations.
So, the label sets the frame, and the eyes fill it in. Does that hold beyond sweatshirts and candy for those big cultural meanings?
Yes. Same machinery, larger canvas. Take red, unless I'm overlooking a snag.
Love, passion, danger, stop signs.
A whole tangle of meanings. And that tangle shifts by culture. In contemporary China, red signals luck and celebration. Go back far enough, and red shows up with death in burial contexts.
Wait.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, seriously. How does a whole culture flip the meaning of a primary color like that?
Slowly, across generations, new dynasties, new philosophies, trade, ritual shifts. The symbolic ledger gets rewritten. Color meaning is living memory, under constant revision.
Now I'm side-eyeing my own archive. That buttery paint I adored as safety, how much of that was me? And how much was shared imagery about yellow, sunlight, warmth, the hearth?
Likely both. And here's a framework I love, ecological valence theory.
Hit me with the plain English version.
It's simple. Our core color likes and dislikes track the emotional valence, good or bad, of things in our environment that typically have those colors.
So blue gets a boost because clear skies and clean water feel good.
Exactly. Greens and browns hint at fertile land and shelter. It's an evolutionary echo. Our color tastes mirror what historically supported survival.
So, not only culture, almost a built-in nostalgia for what kept us alive.
Beautifully put. Shaped over millennia. The life-giving blue of water versus the foul brown of contamination. The fresh green of new growth versus the sallow yellow of decay.
I did not expect the technical bit to be the fun part. And here I am, fully in.
How?
I used to think it was a glitch, missing data. But what if it wasn't? If blue skies scream everything's fine at a deep level, maybe your brain refused the blue on purpose. It decided that signal wasn't the heart of it that day. I can't prove it. It just feels true.
Huh. I hadn't considered that. Not a failed recording, but active curation. Prioritizing the feeling over photorealism.
Yes, an artistic decision. The emotional truth wasn't in the cheerful blue, so it erased it.
Wild. That's much more comforting than corrupt in file. It reframes the whole thing as design, not damage.
It's the human thing. We're not security cameras. We're storytellers to ourselves. Memory isn't a hard drive. It's a studio. And color is some of the best lighting we've got.
So, looking back isn't playback. It's moving through your own gallery. Every shade, from your safe yellow to my intentionally colorless sky, got selected for a reason.
The thing landing for me is how many hands are in that workshop. Not just our unconscious, but evolution, culture, the language we learned, even the person who named the paint.
It's packed in there.
Overflowing, actually. Do we ever see a memory as was, or are we always peering through layers of color we didn't notice?
As a neuroscientist, I find that freeing. The flattering answer is that we can strip the layers to get the original. The honest answer, most of the time, we can't. So the work is to choose the meaning that serves us. The point isn't what the sky was, it's why it shows up gray now.
That's a generous way to live with memory. Not a malfunction. The whole idea.
Color drives the story. Couldn't put it better. And we just traveled from a yellow bedroom to deep time in one sitting.
Thanks for walking it with me. If someone ever hears this, I hope it nudges how they look at their own past.
So next time you're sure you've got a moment down cold, tap me on the shoulder and remind me. Memory is reconstruction, and every recall edits it. That's the architecture of being human. Let's trust our recollections, but double-check the rest.